right. Good evening, everybody. Or should I say good morning? Yeah, a little bit too long of a pay-per-view. I know they don't do it every month, but yeah, with the pre-show, especially that the pre-show felt like a great episode of Rampage. And this is a lot. This is a lot on a Sunday night. But I want to welcome all of you to this AEW Revolution 2022 recap. I am Don Tony, your host for this evening. I want to thank you for joining me. Let's get right into it, because I know a lot of you who are live probably want to get a little bit of sleep, and most of you have seen the pay-per-view, and if you did not, I will tell you right off the bat, you don't want to miss this one. I mean, I will tell you that, yes, you have people online that overly get excited, overexcitement. You know, I'm crying, I'm shaking, I'm melting, and this and that. It was an awesome pay-per-view. This will definitely be in contention of pay-per-view of the year throughout 2022. From top to bottom, it was solid. Out of the entire night, I really only had two issues. One was during the women's championship match, and the other was Andrade. I don't know if you caught that before Sting splashed him through three tables, but man, oh man, man, oh man. Now, look, out of everything that went down tonight, you know, early on, I thought we had another Revolution moment. Remember, it was 2021 Revolution, the main event. Remember Moxley in the middle of the ring? And the exploding death match, and Eddie Kingston covered him up, and we had that wet fart of explosion. I had a brief flashback of that tonight when MJF threw the thumbtacks in the mat, and then CM Punk was thrown into the thumbtacks. If you noticed, there was only two or three in his back. And I thought, oh my God, do we have another Revolution moment this year? Luckily, though, MJF ended up eating all the tacks, and it turned out to be a phenomenal match. But of everything that went down tonight, the one picture that'll always stick with me is this one. Yes, sir. William Regal made his AEW debut, and not only that, he is signed to AEW. William Regal is now part of the team. I know AEW is overloaded with contracts, but I have a feeling that for the majority of us out there, the majority of you out there, this is one where you have to say it was an excellent decision. I don't care if it's an ex-WWE. You know, it's funny. When people do that, oh, it's an ex-WWE. You know, if he was in WWE, you know, he probably was good. You know, and the fact that he is so beloved, why would you not want him on your television? Seriously. I mean, I know with all the clickbait out there and all the sexy stuff, I mean, some of you out there, you must love being lied to with all the Cody stuff that's been going on and everything else. But, you know, me, I just want to be entertained on my television. And William Regal being on the TV is a good thing. Now, I ask you all this question. Do you think William Regal may end up being a manager? Could he be the manager for Bryan Danielson and Jon Moxley if they become a tag team? If they do not become a tag team, does William Regal become the manager for Bryan Danielson? You know, with Bryan Danielson's current attitude, you know, it sort of doesn't fit unless we see a little bit of a shift in Bryan Danielson's attitude. I love it. I love it. That was the moment of the night for me, especially the way he came down. He was just, because after the match was over between Moxley and Bryan Danielson, you know, they teased a handshake. They started brawling. Security couldn't stop it. Referees couldn't stop them brawling. And then William Regal's coming out, and He's like, you're like, what are you two doing? He slaps and chops Moxley, and then he slaps Bryan Danielson, and he gets them to shake hands. I love it. I love it. Excellent. Excellent. Now, yes, I see some of you writing GM. I have been saying this about AEW for a couple of years now. They need a GM character. I know a lot of people were making fun of Tony Khan's in-ring appearance last week on Dynamite. You know, look, man, you know, I said this when AEW first started. Tony Khan, the perfect promotion, his fantasy promotion is a combination of Ring of Honor and ECW. That's always been his love. You get to buy the promotion that you fell in love with so many years ago. Yeah, I think he has earned that right to make the announcement himself, even if it's not as professional. But, you know, Cody saying in numerous interviews over the last couple of years, you know, we're not going to insult fans' intelligence by having a GM. Well, guess what? Cody is gone right now. Bring the fucking GM in there. Have an authority figure out there. You know, the reason why, let's make this clear, and I think this is common sense to all of us out there. The reason why AEW does not do a GM is because of all the clusterfucks, of all the bullshit that happens during matches. Every match, somebody usually comes out for an after-match beatdown. Somebody interferes. Somebody does this. This happens. So you have a GM, and the GM is sitting in the back and not taking action about all this misbehavior. You know, what happens? The storyline gets very stupid very quickly. So when you don't have an authority figure, you don't have an authority figure to enforce their authority. So believe me, I'm with all of you. I want a GM figure, and William Regal would be perfect for it. But at what expense? It's a bigger decision for Tony Khan than you think, because some of the shit that happens during matches, if the GM does not get involved and put a stop to it, do people want that clusterfuck aura to stop? Something to think about. It's not cut and dry. Tonight also, and I know we're going a little out of place, but it's all good. Tonight also, AEW revealed a new women's championship. Now, let me make this clear. There was no title changes tonight. I know on the title of tonight's episode, it says new AEW women's title. I guarantee you some matarazzo out there is going to interpret that as a new champion. No. Excuse me. Ooh, wow. They launched a new championship belt for Britt Baker. And I'll show you a picture of it. Actually, this is a little bit better while I take a sip of my beverage. That is the new AEW Women's World Championship. I think it's beautiful. If any of you out there say, hey, excuse me, that belt kind of reminds you of another belt, you are correct. It is inspired by the Mid-South North American Championship. So, not the greatest picture of the Mid-South NA title, but I figured I'd show it to you if it kind of reminded you of an existing title. It's a nice title. The match between Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa today, oof, that was rough. I mean, you really think about it, outside of street fight, Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker do not have chemistry in that ring. I mean, they really don't. If you really, really, you know, last week, it really was not very good. Today, it was not very good. You know, I don't want anybody to give me that excuse. Well, they had to follow another match. You got chemistry with someone, you have chemistry with someone. You know, you don't think about the people that came before you in the night or is going to go after you in the night. You go out there and you do your thing. And this, to me, that was just a clusterfuck today. The stuff with the referee is just intolerable. And again, that thing with Andrade. I'm not going to give it away yet. Let's run through these matches because tonight, this show ain't going more than an hour. I need to get sleep. You need to get sleep. And going forward, because we're now doing the watch parties, you know, we really need to condense time because it's definitely unfair for all of you out there. And it's unfair to me also to have 20 hours of programming every week. You know, I know you all like to tune into other shows as well. So let's talk about it. And we had the pre-show first. And for me, it was like an episode of Rampage. I don't know if anybody else got that vibe, but what a fun hour for a pre-show. Kickoff match, the first one was Chris Statlander losing to Layla Hirsch. The match was okay. Chris Statlander had a brace on her left leg, and that played a factor for part of the match. There was a little bit of sloppiness. There was one point where Chris Statlander was really selling an injury to her left arm, but then when she hits the Blue Thunder right afterwards, she uses the wrong arm. Layla with a bunch of kicks. Nice hurricanrana to the outside by Layla Hirsch. Layla with a pair of suplexes, but only for two counts. Layla Hirsch locks a cross arm breaker. Chris Statlander gets to the ropes. And the crowd very much behind Statlander. Some people online were giving Layla Hirsch heat for wearing the Russian colors. She's a Russian-American. I mean, I know what's going on overseas in Ukraine is awful, but you're going to tell someone that they can't wear the... You don't take it out on every Russian. I don't know. I thought that was just people maybe just trying to find a reason to complain about stuff. So basically what ends up happening is Chris Statlander gets the upper hand. She dumps Layla Hirsch. Layla Hirsch rolls outside, and then Chris Statlander, for some dopey reason, takes her wrist tape off and throws it on the floor. I watched it back because luckily with Bleacher Report, you can rewind, and she's unrolling the tape, and the referee is looking at her, and he sees that she's unrolling her wrist tape, and she throws it on the floor. The referee is looking at it like, what is that? There was some awful ref stuff tonight. So while the referee is a little bit distracted looking at wrist tape, Layla Hirsch picks up a wrench, clocks Chris Statlander with the wrench, hits the moonsault, gets the pin, and then after, because we need the Acme Insta feud to continue, Red Velvet comes out to console Chris Statlander. So is this going to lead to Red Velvet versus Layla Hirsch? Probably. Not a bad match. You know, like I said, the buy-in, the first hour, I absolutely loved it. Shout out to Dayhawk. I'll get into your super chat in a few minutes, my brother. So now we get an interview with Tony Schiavone, and we think he's going to interview Kenny Omega. His theme is playing. It's on the screen. Everybody's like, holy shit, Kenny Omega. But instead, Don Callis comes out, expecting someone else. And the crowd, not liking Don Callis, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Don Callis is like, why is the crowd pissed? We gave you the best world title run in this business. Despite Kenny Omega's injuries, he did this for all of you. The fans sucked the life out of Kenny Omega. But Don Callis is hyping up the night. It's going to be a great night for the Elite. He predicts a Young Bucks win. And he sort of calls Adam Cole and his group a sleeper cell. Because you see where this is going. We've talked about it for a long time now, and a lot of you knew this already. It's going to be Adam Cole and Red Dragon versus Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks. That is going to be the feud when Kenny Omega is ready to return. Hangman Page is going to have to move on to another challenger. Who that is, we don't know yet. By the way, very happy with Wardlow's performance tonight. We will talk about that in a few minutes. So, since Kenny Omega is not there, Don Callis is confident that Adam Cole will be a great transitional champion until Kenny Omega is ready to return. So, now we get to the next match, and I tell you, man, you know, for only a couple of matches under his belt, you know, I think Hook is doing a fine job. Now, the match with him and QT Marshall, who dat. It's funny, you know, I've been watching a lot more Jim Cornette and Brian Last over the last few months. I mean, I have admitted it. For a very long time, I just could not get into Jim Cornette at all. I just disliked his work. Something just clicked. Now I'm a big fan of it. I listen to everything. And I have heard on more than one occasion, you know, like people like writing in and they're using who dat for QT Marshall, which I thought was pretty cool. But this storyline for the last month or so was to set up the match what we got tonight. The student versus the teacher. Hook versus QT Marshall. Taz is on commentary. And first, QT gets on the microphone. When you want to do something right, you got to do it yourself. And then Hook comes out. Loud reaction from the fans. Yeah, look, you know, for the women and for some men, you know, he's young, attractive. He's very built. You know, he's like a teen idol for some people. So he comes out, and Hook almost immediately hits the bow and arrow on QT Marshall, but QT grabs the ropes. QT Marshall gets the upper hand, and, you know, tonight was good because Hook took a lot more offense from his opponent than usual. And Hook tonight did a much better job selling. He did an excellent job selling. I even think we heard him grimacing in pain a little bit tonight. That's okay. That's all right. So, QT Marshall, shout out to King of Games. Much love, my friend. Yes, I will get into yours too. I am definitely looking forward to Wednesday with Wardlow as well, my friend. So, let's put them on the screen. So, QT Marshall with some brief offense. QT Marshall climbs the ropes, but Hook knocks him off the ropes. QT Marshall gets the upper hand again for a brief time. He attempts a cutter, but Hook avoids it, lands the red rum. Match, you know, not too long, not too short. Did just fine. So another win for Hook, and we see a little bit more progression in his career. So good win for Hook tonight. No complaints at all. Next match, which was a hell of a lot of fun. It had a couple of its caca moments, but overall, this was a brawl. Eric Redbeard, from what I understand, is not all elite. I have not seen anybody posting banners that he is all elite. And as I said, is he going to be around in this storyline until Ray Phoenix is ready for a return? I don't know. Is anybody out there, have you seen something from AEW's offices that Eric Redbeard is signed to an AEW contract? I know other people will just make their own Photoshop version, but I have not seen it. But this match got very physical at times. Eric Redbeard, he got to shine a lot. He did a lot of great offense tonight, but there was a couple of times where you can see the WWE version of Eric Redbeard in the ring, because some of his offense was very, very plain. I think that would be the right way to put it. So very early in the match, you had Brody King and Eric Redbeard, a battle of shoulder blocks, and, you know, it looked like it hurt. I mean, they just kept going into each other. I mean, they must have hit each other with the shoulder blocks at least 20 times. So Redbeard early on taking care of business early. Pack tags himself in, gets some offense against Buddy Matthews, but eventually he is DDT'd. And Brody King with some hard chops to Pack. I mean, there was a lot of chops tonight. See, when I say Brody King, because of, you know, our love for Brody Lee, sometimes you got to catch yourself. I mean, I haven't made that mistake yet, but I'm sure we all have done that. So ultimately, we get the hot tag to Penta. He hits the sunset flip. This was an awesome move. He hits a sunset flip on Malakai, turns it right into a Canadian destroyer to Buddy Matthews. Now, yes, some of these moves look all absolutely ridiculous. There was one to Luchasaurus tonight, which was similar, which was a joke. we'll get into that later. But this looked good. You got this is awesome chance from the fans. Penta ultimately tags Eric Redbeard back in. I feel like I got a sneeze coming. I don't know why. Have you ever seen me sneeze on a show in 25 years? I don't know what it is, but so Buddy Matthews is in the ring with Penta. Penta tags Eric Redbeard. And Eric Redbeard is just having this awkward stare down with Buddy Matthews. And he just waves to him. But I think that was done just to break up the awkwardness because there was just like a little pause there that just felt like brain farts. So he hits a senton onto Buddy Matthews. Malachi ultimately tags himself in. He hit a cutter by Redbeard onto Malachi for a two count. Then we had a moment where every wrestler hit sort of a finisher. Gave you reminisced of TNA and the X Division. Remember the X Division matches where every X Division wrestler would have to hit a move? They hit it on their opponent. The opponent goes down, and then somebody else would hit that person. That person goes down, and then somebody. And everybody got to hit their move. We've talked about that. This happened again tonight. But it was funny because if you go back and you watch that flurry, Eric Redbeard was the only one that didn't have any like finisher to show or a secondary finisher. I think he only like threw a punch. I mean, everybody was hitting their moves and he just threw a punch. It looked kind of goofy. So towards the end of the match, it's back to Brody King and Eric Redbeard. They're exchanging punches. Crowd is into it. A really nice Death Valley driver by Brody King onto Redbeard. Crowd is loving it. Brody King knocks Eric Redbeard outside, hits a tope suicida. And then the next thing you know, the other four guys are in the ring and they're like crawling to each other and they're pissed off. They start brawling. We get a beautiful fear factor by Malachi, onto Malachi, excuse me. And then Eric Redbeard goes for the pin, but he's not the legal man. Go figure in AEW that a referee could actually keep track of that. But Redbeard is not the legal man. So, Redbeard goes for a chokeslam. Buddy Matthews tries to break it up. Malachi kicks Eric Redbeard. Eric Redbeard blocks a second kick and attempts a chokeslam on Malachi Black. But Malachi spits the black mist. Eric Redbeard cannot see. We get an awesome-looking pile driver by Brody King onto Eric Redbeard. And as we expected, we did it in the predictions. Eric Redbeard eats the pin. It feels like he was added to the match mainly to eat the pin. Nice little performance. Nice little performance by Eric Redbeard. I mean, you know, he got a better reaction today than he did when he made his surprise on Rampage. He actually got a really nice reaction when he came out. I just don't know in the future. You know, because you could see Eric Redbeard is meant for a faction, but it doesn't seem to fit with the Death Triangle. So we'll see where it goes. We'll see where it goes. So that was your pre-show. So it feels like we just did a Rampage recap. So now we go to Revolution. I know when Eddie Kingston drops his shirt, you know, his outfit down to his waist. You see his belly. But he, you know, everybody talks about how much weight Chris Jericho has lost. You may not have realized it tonight, but Eddie Kingston has also lost a decent amount of weight. I think he has lost, I would say, about 20 pounds over the last 6 months. And Eddie Kingston, man, so freaking over with the crowd. I mean, the crowd seems to relate to Eddie Kingston. At one point during this match, you had the crowd chanting, fuck him up, Eddie, fuck him up, fuck him up. And Chris Jericho is like to the crowd, giving him the finger. So playing a little heel to the crowd. So Jericho early on in the match is hit with a half and half suplex. And when we watched it on the replay, it looked like Jericho landed on his head. These wrestlers know. I mean, you know, I didn't do it for all that long. You know, but I went to school for 9 months and I was involved in some matches. And believe me, when you land wrong and you feel something, even if you're not injured, you know that the visual must have looked the same for the fans in attendance. So Jericho knew that that crowd saw that suplex, him dropped on his head. And I'm sure it probably like shook him up a little bit. So he's selling the shot to the head. And eventually Jericho gets the upper hand. And he starts working on the orbital bone of Eddie Kingston. So the more he worked on the orbital bone, the louder the Eddie chants got. Jericho gives the crowd the finger. They start exchanging a whole bunch of chops in the center of the ring. Eddie gets Jericho in the corner, drops the straps, and then wails him with a bunch more chops. We get the machine gun chops by Eddie Kingston. I loved every time Jericho chopped Kingston, and he would just stand there and look at him, and he'd be like, that's it, and he'd just go back. And then when Eddie hit the multiple chops, Jericho tried to rake Eddie Kingston's eyes. Eddie Kingston raked Jericho's eyes right back. So he just has that offense that you know crowds pop for. Little things like that. So Eddie Kingston hits a DDT for a two count. Eddie Kingston throughout the match is selling the injury to Aubrey Edwards that he can't really see all that well. One part I didn't like with Aubrey Edwards in this match. You know, Jericho arguing with Aubrey is something that's been going for over 2 years. You know that already. But tonight, Jericho is jawjacking with Aubrey, and maybe I'm wrong, but Aubrey, I thought, shoved Jericho first. I mean, I know you're in her space, but I don't think a referee should be pushing a wrestler in storyline unless they are pushed first. I don't know. That's what I noticed. So Jericho puts Eddie Kingston on the top rope, hits Eddie Kingston with 10 punches, and then nails a Hurricanrana. And the crowd is loving it because Jericho is moving a lot better with that extra weight loss. You could see it, and I know he could feel it. So Jericho removes a turnbuckle, and his intention is to smash Eddie Kingston's orbital bone through the turnbuckle. Jericho hits a suplex from the outside the ring apron to the floor. We get a little bit of a "This is awesome" chant from the crowd. Jericho goes for the lion salt. Here's when it was a little bit of a screw up. If you go back and you watch it, when Jericho went for the lion salt, Eddie Kingston realized that he was too far away. And Eddie Kingston tried to scoot nonchalantly a little bit to the left. And Jericho connected a little bit, but the camera work wasn't all that great. I think in a case like that, if a cameraman realizes that the person in the ring may be too far away, you got to hit the opposite side camera. Because then you can't tell the distance. You can't see Eddie Kingston scooting to his right to compensate, to help, try to help Jericho connect. No, Kay, it's not about it's still real to me. This is art. This is performance. And it's like when you're in a serious movie, you don't want somebody to go, you know, it's performance art. And, you know, things have to be on point. You know, it doesn't have to be perfect. I'm not going to sit here and slam him for 10 minutes. I'm just pointing things out. That's what I do. So we get dueling chants by now because the crowd is really into Jericho's work as well. Let's go, Eddie. And then later on, you had Jericho sucks chants. Jericho hits the walls of Jericho. Eddie grabs the ropes. So Jericho has to break the hold. Baseball Joe, 06, welcome to the family. So with Jericho and Aubrey arguing with each other, Eddie Kingston immediately hits Jericho with a pair of suplexes. Spinning back fist by Eddie Kingston, but only for a two count. Eddie is a little bit surprised. Jericho then gets the upper hand, hits the lion salt, and then hits two cold breakers. Jericho is taunting Eddie Kingston to get up. Jericho goes for the Judas effect, but misses. Eddie Kingston hits another spinning back fist, then hits the stretch plume. starts stretching on Jericho's neck. Jericho taps out. Crowd is loving the match. I said it in the preview, and I know a lot of you out there said it tonight as well. Unless we're not remembering a specific match, I think this was Chris Jericho's best match in AEW so far. And yes, he was world champion. This match was just excellent. Told a great story. After the match is over, Eddie Kingston really felt that he got the right Chris Jericho. So Eddie Kingston extends his hand. I respect you. Shake my hand. Chris Jericho teases a little bit, and then he pulls away. He just says, I can't. Sorry, I can't. Jericho walks off to booze. So right way to go. Right way to go. Jericho just can't accept Eddie Kingston. Makes the crowd love Eddie Kingston even more. Match was excellent. I love this match. I haven't really thought yet about favorite match of the night. I already know my least favorite match of the night. I don't want to reveal it yet. But that match was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it very much. So, next. We get the three-way tag team match for the AEW tag team titles. And the story about this was pretty much what we expected. You'd have a little bit of cooperation between Red Dragon and the Young Bucks. And then ultimately, because each team didn't want the other to win, you know, they would kind of screw each other up. And then this would lead to Jurassic Express to get the upper hand and getting the win. Not going to get into all the moves that went down tonight, but a couple of highlights from the match. There was one point where you had the Young Bucks and Red Dragon outside the ring, and Luchasaurus was going to dive out over the rope. So all four guys ran to the other side of the ring. So as they were running to the other side of the ring, Jungle Boy's like, no problem. Jungle Boy runs to the other side of the ring and dives on all four of them. So later on in the match, Matt Jackson goes to pin Jungle Boy. Kyle O'Reilly breaks up the pin. So we get a little arguing there. Then we had another spot where Kyle O'Reilly pushed Matt Jackson backwards, kind of tripping him, leading to Jungle Boy almost pinning Matt Jackson. So Kyle O'Reilly breaks that up. More arguing between the two. Luchasaurus gets the hot tag by Jungle Boy, hits a bunch of super kicks to both members of the Young Bucks. Then he does his moonsault outside the ring to Red Dragon. Goes for the choke slam, which turned into a Canadian destroyer by Nick Jackson. That was the move that I was saying before, that I thought that looked a little bit goofy. Nothing against Matt Jackson, but Matt Jackson is a very small guy. And when you have Luchasaurus has Matt Jackson by the throat, Matt Jackson somehow flips over and turns it into a Canadian destroyer. That's like video game shit. You know, it just looked ridiculous when that happened. If it would have been on Jungle Boy or a reasonably sized wrestler like Matt Jackson, that's fine. But to Luchasaurus, it looked ridiculous. So ultimately, Luchasaurus gets the upper hand. He starts beating down on Matt Jackson. A really nice doomsday device by Jurassic Express for a two count. We get This Is Awesome. I think we got This Is Awesome chance for almost every match tonight. Some we didn't, which we'll talk about. Super kick by Matt Jackson, and he intended on hitting Jungle Boy, but accidentally hit Bobby Fish by mistake. Matt looks at the camera, almost like Pete Dunne. Oh, well. Bobby Fish is, Kyle O'Reilly is not happy. So finally, they start brawling, and the crowd is loving it. Jungle Boy hits Kyle O'Reilly, who bounces off the ropes just to be greeted by a super kick from Matt Jackson. Kyle O'Reilly bounces off the ropes a second time, and he clotheslines both of them. Looked all right on TV. We get an insane shooting star pressed by Jungle Boy while Luchasaurus had the guillotine on Kyle O'Reilly. that led to a bunch of holy shit chants. Kyle O'Reilly ultimately hits a tombstone on Jungle Boy, but is immediately super kicked by the Young Bucks. The Young Bucks hit the BTE on Jungle Boy. Kyle O'Reilly breaks up the count. Then, towards the end of the match, we get an interesting move where Nick Jackson goes to the corner, and he hits the corner and he falls down. So Jungle Boy uses Nick Jackson's back to hit a Huracanrana onto Matt Jackson. So Luchasaurus, and this looked horrible on TV, totally missed the super kick. Totally missed. But immediately after, they hit Jurassic Express onto Nick Jackson for the pin. So Jurassic Express is still your tag team champions. It was an okay match. Had a lot of singular moments, but it also had a couple of moments that were a little bit sloppy. So Matthew says, you know what looks ridiculous is the Young Bucks finishing move, the Indy Taker. If it's done right, it looks great. You're basically hitting a tombstone pile driver and you're supposed to push the legs down for a little bit extra force. Problem is, the timing is so hard to nail perfectly because there's so many other circumstances involved. So when they don't hit it the right way, it doesn't look good. And yes, I've seen them do some very subpar indie takers in AEW. They make an announcement that Double or Nothing is going to take place May 29th in Las Vegas. So now we go to the Face of the Revolution match. And, you know, I had a couple of very small GIF files that I was going to play during tonight, but I don't want to take a chance of getting hit with any copyright from AEW, so I can't show it. But for me, the moment of the night was Orange Cassidy in the middle of the ring. And I hope he's okay, because something happened during that match that did not look good at all. We will talk about it. So early on in the match, you got Wardlow, Powerhouse Hobbs, and Keith Lee, the three big boys, having a stare down in the ring. Orange Cassidy rolls into the ring and wants to be in on the fun a little bit. He does his kicks, you know, to the guys. Ricky Starks hits the ring. Everybody ultimately goes outside. Everybody is brawling outside the ring. Christian takes out everyone with a ladder. Christian brings a ladder in the ring, but Ricky Starks takes him out. Orange Cassidy then takes out Ricky Starks, and he starts climbing the ladder. Christian comes back in, hits the kill switch. Then he dumps Orange Cassidy and Ricky Starks out of the ring. Powerhouse Hobbs takes out Christian and tries to climb the ladder. Christian comes back in and hits a reverse DDT onto Hobbs, which looked pretty nice. Then we get those moments that we miss with Keith Lee in NXT. Christian is taunting Hobbs, who's on the mat, and Keith Lee, you know, creeps up behind him. Little vintage creep, Keith Lee. I almost said creeply, Keith Lee. And they start going at it a little bit. Leapfrog by Keith Lee to show everyone, yeah, I could still move around. Hit a really nice leapfrog over Christian, and then hit a double crossbody onto Christian and Ricky Starks. Orange Cassidy tries to dive onto Keith Lee, but he catches him. And Orange Cassidy is upside down, and Keith Lee is just swinging him like a dart into other wrestlers. That's not the moment, though, that I'm about to tell you. So Keith Lee tries to climb the ladder, but Wardlow stops him. Wardlow just tells Keith Lee, climb down, let's go. You know, so Wardlow was a little bit nice with the ladders during the match, until the end. So Keith Lee climbs back down the ladder, and Powerhouse Hobbs immediately grabs the ladder and takes both guys out of the ring. So we don't get that moment with Wardlow and Keith Lee brawling a little bit. Ricky Starks back in the ring. Powerhouse Hobbs is in the ring. They both are on each side of the ladder. They're part of Team Taz. So they shake hands and they race to see who could climb the ladder first. Orange Cassidy ends up knocking both of them out of the ring. Then I thought this was a little bit of a dumb moment. Orange Cassidy puts the ladder over his head. If you remember Terry Funk, Barely Legal, which is the one I remember more than anything. The only reason why I thought it was stupid today is because if you look at Hobbs and a few others, they kept like running right into the ladder. Orange Cassidy is just spinning. You know, like if somebody goes in the ring, then you go like this and spin the ladder. Orange Cassidy just was spinning. And people, just picture, this is Orange Cassidy and this is Hobbs. Boop. 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 Looked a little goofy, to be honest with you. But my favorite moment of the night. You got Wardlow and Keith Lee with the ladder. And Orange Cassidy is hanging underneath the ladder. They pick the ladder up from off the ground. And Orange Cassidy is hanging off the ground under the ladder. So if you remember, I think Shawn Michaels is the one that does it the best. Shawn Michaels' Royal Rumbles would be thrown over the top rope. And he would hold on. And then he would just flip upside down and get himself back in the ring. Orange Cassidy did that on the ladder. And when he did it on the ladder and got to the top of the middle ladder of the ladder, he was right above the brass ring, which looked great. So they were like, no fucking way. They crotch him. But that, to me, was awesome. That spot was very good. So just to speed this up a little bit, we had a horrible moment. We had a horrible moment. There was one moment where Orange Cassidy was inside the ring with Keith Lee. Powerhouse Hobbs climbs the ladder with Wardlow. Keith Lee brings in the second ladder. That second ladder will come into play in the end. So now just picture this. You have two ladders in the ring. One ladder has Orange Cassidy, Powerhouse Hobbs and Wardlow on the same ladder trying to climb it. On the opposite ladder, you have Christian, Ricky Starks, and Keith Lee all trying to climb the ladder too. So everybody gets knocked off. Hobbs and Wardlow are on each ladder, and they both grab the brass ring at the same time. They both grab it. And instead of just trying to like headbutt each other or try to do something to get the other... They just both decide, they go down the ladder a little bit, they start brawling, and they go off the ladder. Here's the spot. You got Ricky Starks and Christian outside the ring. Keith Lee throws Orange Cassidy outside the ring onto Ricky Starks and Christian, but he overshot him. And it looked like Orange Cassidy just fell square on his back, his neck. It looked kind of scary. And I saw a few people who were live in attendance said that Orange Cassidy had to be attended. So we don't know if he's injured or not, but it did look kind of scary on TV. So towards the end of this match, we have Wardlow and Powerhouse Hobbs, along with Keith Lee, they're brawling up the rampway. There is another ladder by the beginning of the entrance. So Hobbs and Wardlow grab the ladder, and they, like a wishbone, pull it apart. So they each have half a ladder. So far, Wardlow and Hobbs are working in sync with each other. But when Wardlow turns his back, Hobbs hits him. And basically, Hobbs and Keith Lee start brawling near the announcer's desk. And you see that there's some setup on the floor. So they go to the announcer's desk, and Hobbs tries to chokeslam Keith Lee off the stage. But here's Wardlow behind them. Wardlow pushes both of them off the stage. So they're done. They are done. Orange Cassidy is done. I don't recall seeing much of Christian after that. Actually, one spot I remember with Christian, because it had to do with Danhausen. Told you that shit was happening. But they did a little tweak tonight. Instead of Danhausen putting a curse, somebody falling off the ladder, basically, Christian is in the ring with Ricky Starks. They're going at it briefly. Danhausen comes out, puts the curse on Ricky Starks, but he pulls him off the ladder. And Danhausen gets out of Dodge. So Wardlow hits the powerbomb on Christian. Christian is pretty much done. Ricky Starks climbs the ladder. Remember the second ladder that Keith Lee brought in the ring earlier? We have the regular ladder with the brass ring on top. Then we have another ladder sideways that's wedged between the main ladder and the side of the ring. So Ricky Starks climbs the ladder. Wardlow follows him. And Wardlow sets him up and power bombs him onto the other ladder. So Ricky Starks is laid out. Wardlow climbs the remaining part of the ladder, grabs the brass ring. Wardlow is your winner. So I believe in 2 weeks, Wardlow will face the TNT champion. Remember, next week it's going to be Sammy Guevara versus Scorpio Sky. So the winner of that match will face Wardlow the following week. Will we get, you know, a loss due to Sean Spears or MJF? It's possible. It's possible. So before we go to the next match, we get a little bit of a surprise. Tony Schiavone brings out Shane Strickland, Swerve Strickland, the former Isaiah Swerve Scott, and he signs the contract. He is now All Elite. Master Bird, shout out to you. Yes, I agree with you. The powerbomb to Starks' neck. You know, he felt a little awkward, but I heard that Ricky Starks was okay. So, look good on TV, but I heard he's okay. So, fingers crossed that he's okay. So, Swerve, you know, the crowd knew who he was. They're in Orlando. You know, he's pretty good in NXT. Isaiah Swerve Scott. And, you know, he's cutting a little promo. Whose house? Swerve's house. So Isaiah Swerve Scott, you now know as Shane Strickland, Swerve Strickland. He is now All Elite. So we go to the next match. Talk to me. Okay. This fell flat. Honestly, both women's matches fell flat tonight. I mean, I'm not counting Layla Hirsch and Chris Statlander. That was the buy-in. Ty Conti, a little face paint, war paint, as they said. As she's coming down to the ring, Anna Jay and -1, -1 is there to show a little support. You have Christone Ingram doing a guitar solo to Jade Cargill's theme, which actually was pretty damn good. Guy was very talented with the guitar. So, awkward moment. Ty Conti is having a stare down in the ring with Jade Cargill. Jade Cargill proceeds to kiss Ty Conti. You know, just came out of nowhere. Don't know why. We had some awkward offense at the beginning of the match. Ty Conti hits a DDT. And this was weird. Aubrey Edwards doesn't count because Jade's foot is under the ropes. So Ty Conti pulls her leg from out of the ropes and pins her again, and Aubrey Edwards doesn't count anything. There was multiple ref bullshit tonight. So then Ty Conti dives outside the ring onto Mark Sterling, who no-sold it within a minute. So because Ty Conti did that to Mark Sterling, Anna Jay, who was at ringside, gets kicked in the head by Jade Cargill. Meanwhile, the referee is watching all of this. Why isn't the referee ejecting Mark Sterling? Why isn't the referee ejecting Anna Jay? Anna Jay's not a manager. Why should she be there in the first place? So Ty Conti hits the fruit roll-up for a two count, then hits a DDT for a two count, and each time she's acting shocked disbelief. And honey, if you're that shocked in disbelief that somebody kicks out only because of a DDT in AEW, maybe you need new employment. Because you go back and you watch it, the fruit roll-up, she's like, the fucking fruit roll-up. So anyway, Jade Cargill jackknifes Ty Conti. It's a nice frog splash. Never saw Jade Cargill do a frog splash before. She did it pretty good. Only got a two count, but she ultimately hit the Jaded for the win. And Mark Sterling is right back in the ring celebrating with Jade Cargill. So that was your winner, Jade, who's now, what, 29-0? So continuing. We might be like 10 minutes over tonight. That's okay. You know, this was a lot of matches, like 12 matches. So trying to go through them, give him a fair amount of time. MJF versus CM Punk. Now, you know, everyday fans, some that never watched Ring of Honor or CM Punk at Ring of Honor, I didn't expect you to know it. But once again, I saw a few people who claim that they've been lifelong Ring of Honor fans who had no idea that CM Punk came out to his old Ring of Honor theme, which is Miseria Cantare, Cantar, depending how you say it, by AJI. Some people say Aji. I say AJI. I don't listen to that music, but I recognized it as CM Punk when I used to have my theme music radio station. That was one of the themes on there. But CM Punk comes out old school. Shout out to Nero Faye. Hope everything is well with you. Little old school tonight with CM Punk coming out to old school Second City Saint, Ring of Honor, outfit music. And crowd is loving it. Some people knew right away, and a lot of people did not. Before Punk came out, we thought Punk was coming out first, because Punk's original music hit for about 3 seconds, but then MJF's music hit. So MJF was just trolling the fans. Remember before CM Punk signed? Remember I said that MJF should have trolled the fans like 2 months before? When the rumors started coming out, he should have trolled the fans by having Punk's music hit for a few seconds. Then he comes out to his regular music. But it was pretty cool to see that tonight. So CM Punk comes out to his old outfit, immediately busted open because obviously those wounds from Wednesday have not had enough time to heal. And look, I'm not going to lie. This match told a great story. And the moves that they did made sense for the match. But there were a lot of times that that crowd was kind of quiet, that it felt like it dragged, but with this type of match, I think it needed to have this kind of pace because there's some people complaining that the match just felt like it was dragging a little bit. Early on, MJF is just trying to get out of Dodge, is afraid, just wants out. AFI. Did I say AJI? I'm sorry, AFI. Sorry. AJ, I typed it wrong before. AFI. So MJF early on in the match, trying to get out of Dodge, you know, is pretty much scared shit about CM Punk, but ultimately gets the upper hand and CM Punk is busted open almost immediately. MJF grabs the microphone, give it up, old man, quit now. CM Punk is like, eat shit, Max. So the fight continues. Punk gets a little bit of offense, but MJF gets the upper hand again. MJF wraps the chain around CM Punk's neck, tries to choke him out like he did in the last match that they had. This got a little scary. MJF goes for a pile driver, but can't hit because he's selling pain to his hand, which was injured earlier in the match. CM Punk goes for the GTS, but MJF counters with Salt of the Earth. Punk breaks out of the Salt of the Earth with a pin attempt. CM Punk hits the Anaconda, or lands the Anaconda Vice. MJF pulls CM Punk's hair, gets a pin attempt for a two. Okay. So far, it's fine. I like the quote by Jim Ross. MJF would like to leave, but he's a little tied up right now. I don't have the... CM Punk wraps the chain around MJF's eyes, and the fans are loving it. They're chanting, "You deserve it." But then we had a scary moment. If you go back and you watch it, look at it in slow motion. I don't know how MJF was not injured in the spot. CM Punk throws MJF in the ring steps. MJF ultimately gets the upper hand, tries to pile drive CM Punk on the edge of the ring apron, but CM Punk reverses it. And when he nailed his pile driver, if you look, it looked like his head just turned the other way. It looked scary. There was a lot of people online like, holy shit, I hope he's okay. In fact, the referee was trying to get MJF to move his arm to show that he was okay. They even flashed it on the crowd, and the crowd looked very concerned. It was scary. But it ends up he was okay. Punk, through all of this, is selling an injury to the right leg. He's climbing the ropes, and he's hopping the ropes, technically. He wraps the chain around his elbow. He yells, "Best in the world," and he wants to do the elbow drop, but MJF just rolls out of the way. Here's where we get the thumbtack spot. MJF pours thumbtacks in the ring. He goes for a bulldog, but Punk bites his hand, so it doesn't happen. CM Punk attempts a brainbuster onto the tacks, but his knee gave out. So MJF attempts a suplex. Punk stops it. Punk hits a roundhouse kick onto MJF. And by now, the bleeding in CM Punk's head started to clear up. Because, look, when you tease that you may stop a match because of excessive bleeding, I don't know how you could bleed more than that and it not stopped the match. But by this time during the match, the bleeding started to clear up a little bit. Started coagulating, so it wasn't as bad. So what ends up happening is Punk climbs the top rope, and everybody thought he was going to try to hit the Pepsi plunge. But MJF stopped it. MJF climbs up to the mid rope and suplexes CM Punk, but CM Punk does not fall far enough. And I kid you not, there was only 3 thumbtacks in CM Punk's back. And again, it looked like, oh my God, we got another revolution moment with the exploding stuff last year. He had a bunch in his ass, but he only had 3 in his back. But ultimately, MJF would land on the tacks. MJF calls for Wardlow, screaming Wardlow's name. Wardlow comes out. He wants the diamond ring, the dynamite diamond ring. Wardlow's like, "I don't have it. Oh, shit. I don't know where it is." And MJF is pissed off. MJF turns around. Punk hits the GTS, and MJF lands in the tacks. So while MJF is selling the tacks, Wardlow is like, "Oh, it was in my right pocket." So he pulls out the ring, and CM Punk is sitting in the ring looking at Wardlow. Wardlow takes the ring, puts it on the apron, not too far away from CM Punk, and he walks off. So Wardlow turned on MJF. CM Punk grabs the ring. CM Punk is about to knock MJF out. MJF spits in his face. CM Punk knocks his ass out. CM Punk is your winner. So this was a bloodbath. It was a brawl. It was physical. They didn't do any moves that would have been ridiculous for the amount of hate, the blood feud that they have. Everything they did made sense. It told a wonderful story. I hope it's not over. I hope it's not over. Obviously, the story shifts now because MJF, we got to see what happens with Wardlow. Because what could happen is MJF may turn around with Wardlow and say, "Look, okay, touche. I'm sorry for what I said last week. I don't blame you, this and that." And maybe Wardlow MJF gives Wardlow a false sense of security. And then either Wednesday or the Wednesday after, Wardlow gets the shit knocked out of him. We'll see what happens on Wednesday. But he could either be a full-blown turn. It's a turn. That's it. They're no longer together. Or MJF forgives him. Wardlow buys it. And then he ultimately gets attacked. So if they do the full-blown that way, then maybe you got to move to Wardlow versus MJF. But you'll probably get Wardlow versus Shawn Spears first. You definitely get that first. So, all right, now we got a little bit of cacas. We got a little bit of cacas. Dr. Britt Baker retaining the AEW Women's Championship over Thunder Rosa. You know, the crowd was into it a little bit, but as I said before, if they're not fighting a street fight, or as Jim Cornette calls it, you know, lazy rules, a lazy match, you know, they don't have, lazy booking, excuse me, they don't have that much chemistry. There's a lot of awkward moments in their match, and the referee storyline tonight was awful. Three different times, Rebel just climbs the rope, and the referee spends all his time being distracted by Rebel just so shit could happen to Thunder Rosa. You do it once, okay. Do it a second time, it's kind of goofy. You do it a third time, it's ridiculous. This match fell flat. It was not good. And I'll be honest with you, it was my least favorite match of the night. Not even close. They, at one point, had some dueling punches. Thunder Rosa hits a slap onto Britt Baker. Britt Baker hits an avalanche, air raid crash for a two count. Thunder Rosa hits a tombstone. And the referee is just allowing her to just stand, Rebel just to stand there. Thunder Rosa hits a tombstone. Rebel just stands on the ropes, and the referee is like telling her, go down on the ropes, and she's not doing anything. And he's just standing there looking at Rebel. Meanwhile, Jamie Hayter cheap shots Thunder Rosa. So now it happens a second time. Thunder Rosa gets pissed. Thunder Rosa nails Rebel. Rebel is back on the apron again, and this time, if you go back and watch it, you will see it. The second time this happened, the referee turns to Rebel, and he turned back, and he realized, oh, shit, I turned back too quickly. He sees what's going on. He sees that Britt Baker has the belt, puts it in a ring, hits the curb stop on the belt. The referee goes back and looks at Rebel. It was awful. So Rebel is distracting the referee. Britt Baker hits a curb stomp onto the belt for a two count. Thunder Rosa is now pissed off, and she goes and dives outside the ring onto Rebel. Thunder Rosa then tries to lock on her own version of the lockjaw, and Thunder Rosa is punching her own hand. The camera work is right, and Thunder Rosa, she's trying to put the lockjaw, and she's punching her own hand. The camera work was awful. Believe it or not, Rebel hits the fucking apron a third time. This is where Thunder Rosa just dives onto Rebel, and she clotheslines Jamie Hayter. But Thunder Rosa rolls back in the ring and is immediately greeted by another curb stomp for the win. So Thunder Rosa loses again. And to make matters worse, they announce that this Wednesday, it's going to be Layla Hirsch versus Thunder Rosa. And the winner of that match is going to take on Britt Baker, I think, at St. Patrick's Day Slam. I mean, unless they add a stipulation where Rebel and Jamie Hayter are barred from ringside. By the way, where was Mercedes Martinez tonight having Thunder Rosa's back? It was freaking awful. Three different times the referee is distracted, and he's just standing there like a goof. And it's just, it's awful. See, again, you know, a lot of people, because they love AEW, to let these little things go. But, you know, it just doesn't look good on TV. Oh, wait till I get to Andrade. Wait till I get to Andrade. That's coming up very soon. John Moxley defeats Bryan Danielson. This was a brawl. The crowd chanting early, "We want violence. We want violence." Bryan Danielson early on with some offense. Him being a little bit cocky, doing jumping jacks. So John Moxley is in the ring. He says, "Free shot." So Bryan Danielson slaps him. Moxley immediately proceeds to chop and punch Bryan Danielson in the head. So Moxley, he taunts Bryan Danielson. Absolute hard-nosed brawl. A lot of brawling between these two guys. Moxley, at one point, was in the ring with Danielson. Danielson hit the lapel lock. John Moxley grabs the ropes. Bryan Danielson then hits the knee and starts stomping on Moxley. His head, his neck, his back. He puts the triangle sleeper onto John Moxley. And Bryan Danielson, with his elbows to Moxley's head, everything looks stiff in this match. I mean, it was a brawl. It didn't last as long as I think people wanted it to, but it was a brawl. There was another goofy moment where Bryan Danielson had a submission move, the triangle choke on John Moxley. And at one point, Bryan Danielson had his shoulders on the mat. And the referee is just looking at him and didn't try to count or anything. So just something I picked up on. You'll probably picked up on it as well. So while Bryan Danielson has this submission move on John Moxley, John Moxley flips over Bryan Danielson, and then because Bryan Danielson didn't break the hold, Moxley was able to pin him. And it was a pin out of nowhere. You know, it was a little surprising. And after the match is over, Bryan Danielson extends his hand. We think we're going to have actually a handshake. They both bled a little bit. And next thing you know, they start brawling. Referees try to break it up. No success. Security tries to break it up. No success. And then, as I showed you earlier, we see William Regal walking down the ring, and crowd is losing their shit. Crowd loved it, freaking loved it. William Regal hits the ring, and he's trying to knock some sense into these guys. He chops Mox, slaps Mox in the head. Bryan Danielson is laughing his ass off. He's like, "Yeah, you go, William. You go, Regal." And Regal turns around to Bryan Danielson. He's like, "Uh-uh." And he fucking slaps Bryan Danielson as well. And Bryan Danielson is acting a little bit shocked. And William Regal wants to see them shake hands. And out of respect to Regal, they shake hands. He does have that daddy vibe, Ray. I loved it. I loved it. I just don't know if Bryan Danielson's attitude is going to change because of this. I'm not so sure. And what is William Regal's role going to be? Does he become a GM figure, or does he become a manager for either Bryan Danielson or Bryan Danielson and John Moxley? So we will see soon. But that is awesome that William Regal is now a member of AEW. I know they have too many contracts, but this is one guy I absolutely love in that company. Still a shame that WWE let him go. But you know what? He'll probably have a more on-air role in AEW than he would have if he remained with WWE. So, fun match. Fun match. Love the after-match work. Okay. You remember Raven's rules? You remember that, right? To me, this is Sting's rules. When Sting has matches, this is Sting's rules. Texas Tornado, anything goes, street fight, this and that. This way he doesn't have to take back bumps. This way he could just, you know, for the most part, brawl. And this was a flat-out brawl. You had the entire AHFO getting involved in this, Butcher and the Blade getting involved, Mark Quinn getting involved, and this was a brawl all over the building. And I will say, it must be awfully cool for Matt Hardy to be brawling with Sting. When you think of their careers and to realize, I think anybody, you get an opportunity to be able to brawl with Sting. I think anybody that's a wrestler, if Sting was one of your favorites growing up, and you get the opportunity to get your ass kicked from him, you take it. You do it. So this was an absolute brawl. Early on in the match, Sammy Guevara gets nailed with a chair. Isaiah Cassidy, one very cool move, hit the silly string onto Sammy Guevara outside the ring. And here's where everything just goes off the rails. The Butcher and the Blade enter the picture. They are brawling with Sting. The Butcher starts to brawl one-on-one with Sting. Isaiah Cassidy starts going to the back. And basically what's going to happen is, you know, they try to set up Sammy Guevara on the table. Mark Quinn is there. Isaiah Cassidy climbs part of the stage, and Sammy Guevara is laid on a table. With Isaiah Cassidy all the way at the top of the stage, Guevara gets off the table and knocks Mark Quinn for a loop. So Isaiah Cassidy's looking around like, how do I get down? Well, how the fuck did you get up there in the first place? So before he could do anything, Sammy climbs to the top of the stage, and Sammy knocks him off with the Spanish fly. They both go through the table, and it looked like they landed awkwardly. Isaiah Cassidy, I mean, I hope he's okay. His ankle looked like it smacked against the floor because they had two tables set up, and they only went through one. So it looked like they landed pretty hard. So they are pretty much out of it for this. And then if you go back and you watch, Aubrey Edwards is kneeling down next to both Sammy Guevara and Isaiah Cassidy. She's not calling for help. She's not trying to get medical attention. You go back and watch, she's literally on her knees next to them, just chilling, hanging out. Go back and watch it if you think I'm making it up. So, more referee goofiness. Here is where I absolutely hated it. Butcher and the Blade stack up two tables, end up being three. And at one point, Sting is, the idea is they're going to put Sting through three tables. Sting fights off Butcher and the Blade himself, takes out Butcher and the Blade. Matt Hardy gets the upper hand. Matt Hardy is brawling through the crowd with Sting, and he brings Sting by the tables. At this time, Andrade is brawling with Darby Allin. And I swear to God, I will not do another show again if I'm making up what I'm about to say. You got to go back and watch it and see it for yourself. Darby Allin is brawling with Andrade. I'm assuming Andrade got the upper hand because Darby Allin moved out of the way. Andrade is standing right next to the table. Nobody hit him. Nobody pulled him. Andrade, on camera, he climbs onto the table. And what happens? Sting dives off the top of the stage, puts Andrade through three tables. Tommy Dreamer would be proud. Sting's move was insane for somebody that age. The move itself was fucking incredible. It's amazing this man could do shit like that. But you got to go back and you see it. I wanted to put the clip on this show, but I'm too afraid of copyright strikes. You got to go back and see. Andrade just climbed onto the table and laid down for Sting to do the splash. It was fucking awful. I don't know what the hell he was doing. Honestly, shit like that is not acceptable. It's not acceptable. So Sting takes out Andrade. Sting is also out. So what ends up happening is Matt Hardy and Darby Allin make it back to the ring. Matt Hardy tries to get the upper hand, but Darby Allin hits the Scorpion Death Drop onto a chair with Matt Hardy. Puts Matt Hardy through a chair with the Scorpion Death Drop. Then Darby Allin climbs the top rope, hits the coffin drop onto Matt Hardy, pins him. Sting, Darby Allin, and Sammy Guevara are your winners. So I hope Isaiah Cassidy is okay. I hope Sammy Guevara is okay. And I don't know what the fuck Andrade was doing. You got to go back and you got to watch it. I watched it three times, but I was watching it through my computer. So maybe when I watch it through my TV, maybe I'll see something. But I watched it three times, and it just looked like Andrade just laid on the table. So now we go to the main event. And no, by the way, Paige VanZant did not sign any contract, despite what Dan Lambert had said. Just want to make that point. The main event, I didn't take any notes. I will tell you, I thought this match went on way too long. AEW is creating a big problem for themselves with Hangman Page. Because at the beginning of this match, Hangman Page was over with everybody. He still had a majority of the crowd behind his back. But at the very end of the match, where Hangman Page tied Adam Cole to the rope and started hitting him with super kicks to the head, crowd was booing. Crowd booed quite a bit to Hangman Page. This match was very physical. I mean, you have, you know, Hangman Page with his moonsault outside the ring, Adam Cole, you know, tons of kicks, you know, a couple of Panama sunrises. We didn't get as much outside interference as I thought we would. We did at the very end, because Red Dragon came out for a little bit trying to distract Hangman Page. And then ultimately the Young Bucks came out there. The Dark Order came out there. And then everybody just started brawling with each other. But this match was okay. Honestly, I know there was a lot of two counts. And at some point, some people thought, oh my God, Adam Cole may actually win this. Because Adam Cole, you know, I will give them credit for this little detail, and that's why detail is so important. You know, Adam Cole, he hits the Panama Sunrise, then he pulls the knee pad down, he lowers the boom, gets the pin. That's how he usually wins matches. This time around, Adam Cole hit the Panama Sunrise, and he hit the boom, but he didn't pull his knee pad down. I know for some of you, you're going to be like, oh, God, please. But, you know, in storyline, yeah, that could be the difference between getting a win and getting a 2.5, an account. So Excalibur, this is obviously pre-planned. Excalibur says, you know, he didn't pull his D-pad down. So Adam Cole was unable to get a 3 count off of his moves. And yes, AEW constantly has, you know, a lot of wrestlers kicking out of everything. I mean, look, you had Adam Cole hit a tombstone onto Hangman Page tonight, and he kicked out. And Jim Ross, you know, his badass, ballsy comments sometimes, you know, if your opponent kicks out from a tombstone, you have a problem. You know, because you think of Undertaker with tombstone, you nail that, that's it, game over. In AEW, you nail 50,000 moves, and it's not game over. So Hangman Page got some cowboy shit chants tonight. This is wrestling. This is Adam. You know, he was over. But towards the end of the match, you know, they were trying to paint the story that Hangman Page was giving payback to Adam Cole for what Adam Cole did to him. But the crowd didn't like it. Crowd didn't like it at all. And towards the end of the match, when Hangman Page was going for the buckshot lariat, and he hit it, and he went for the pin, and Adam Cole just barely touched the ropes. I mean, literally, with his just the side of his hand, he touched the rope. So the referee stopped the count. So Hangman Page grabs, I guess, his belt with a buckle, and he ties Adam Cole's wrist, you know, around the ring rope, and he's kicking him over and over and over, and the crowd is booing. And the match, to me, just went 5 to 10 minutes too long. It really dragged. I mean, it ended at midnight, and the pre-show, the buy-in, was at 7. So we had 5 hours. I mean, before WrestleMania was 2 nights. That's a WrestleMania. The match overall was good, but, you know, sometimes, you know, less is more. And there were too many finishers, and kicking out and kicking out and kicking out. And then ultimately, Hangman Page, you know, he hits a couple of kicks on Adam Cole. Adam Cole turns around on the last attempt and actually kicks Hangman Page in the head. So Adam Cole is trying to pull the buckle off of his wrist, untie himself. And while he's doing that, Hangman Page is setting himself up on the opposite side of the ring. So when Adam Cole turned around, Hangman Page nailed him with a kick, nailed him with the boom, nailed him with the buckshot lariat, gets the pin. Adam Cole is laid out in the ring, and Hangman Page picks up Adam Cole's hand. No response because he's knocked out. He picks up his hand and he grabs it and shakes his hand and then drops it back down. And that's how we go off the air. So we didn't get too much interference. I mean, for about 2 minutes, you had everybody come out. There was a little distraction, but for the most part, they let these guys go one-on-one. And it was a decent match, but to me, it went a little bit long. So, and that was your recap. So my favorite match of the night, boy, favorite match of the night. I'm probably going to go with CM Punk and MJF. Because, you know, one thing, when I used to do my hotlines in the 90s, we used to joke about it with WWF, that you would have two people that have a blood feud. That they can't wait, you know, at this pay-per-view, I'm going to kick your ass. No, I'm going to kick your ass. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to say that. And then the first move they do at the pay-per-view is a headlock. I can't tell you how many times we would watch pay-per-views and they would open up with a collar and elbow tie-up. You want to kill someone? The last thing you do is lock up collar and elbow. Tonight, everything that they did is what you would want to do when you wanted to beat the shit out of someone. And MJF with his psychology, CM Punk with his, loved the retro intro by CM Punk. When CM Punk won, they played his regular music afterwards, but, you know, a little old school. Look, we just saw it with Edge coming out with the Brood theme. A little retro is great. And sure, you know, if AEW didn't buy Ring of Honor, maybe CM Punk would not have done the entrance. But so what? A little retro is fine. It's a little fine. It's a little bit of psychology. But yeah, MJF versus CM Punk was my favorite match of the night. My least favorite match of the night was Thunder Rosa versus Britt Baker. And again, if they're going to have another match against each other, they have to have a special stipulation. And Thunder Rosa has to win. She has to win. I mean, for most of us, we thought she was going to win tonight. Now, we heard that she had a little bit of an injury. Did that come into play? I have no idea. It didn't seem like it today. But, you know, they don't have as much chemistry as you think, unless they're having a street fight. So, before I go, a couple of shout-outs, if you don't mind. Dayhawk, 666. The new belt reminds him of the Gift of the Gods championship from Lucha Underground. And thank you, my friend. I will have some coffee tomorrow. I'm going to need it. That's for sure. What time is it? almost 1:30 in the morning. God. Yeah, like I said before, I mean, this is the women's championship. There's a better picture of it. That's the women's championship, and it was inspired by the New South, North American championship, Mid-South. I say New South. It's getting late. Mid-South North American championship. I knew that sounded wrong. Yeah, the design is similar. But I tell you, I like the look of this title. I really like the look of this title. I mean, yeah, they just changed it recently, but I'm liking it. I'm liking it. Nice upgrade. Very nice upgrade. So, King of Games, I'm with you. I want to see what happens with Wardlow on Wednesday. You know, AEW has a habit of doing things every 2 or 3 weeks. So, you know, will we even see MJF on Wednesday? I don't know. Maybe MJF sells the injuries and returns the following week. But remember, Wardlow has the title match in 2 weeks. He's going to take on what is likely going to be Sammy Guevara. So if Wardlow's going to get screwed from MJF or Sean Spears, it's likely going to be next Wednesday, not this Wednesday. So, but it's going to be interesting, man. Wardlow, I like it. The crowd earlier, Wardlow, it has a little Goldberg vibe to it. So they got something good with Wardlow. And we'll see where it goes from here. I'm enjoying it. Master Bird, the powerbomb to Stark's neck on the ladder had him worried. Yeah, look, you know, I think a lot of people forget about Ricky Starks and his neck issues. So to take a powerbomb on a ladder, that's not a toy ladder. That shit hurts. Even if you land perfectly, it shit hurts. So we hope that it wasn't overarched. I will tell you, I don't want to put any worries in any, I don't do that here unless, you know, there's legitimate reason to. There was a few people in attendance who were DMing me some feedback during the show, what was going on. And they said that, you know, he was very ginger, you know, as far as being held, walked to the back. But I think it was more him selling the spot than anything else. You're not going to just get up. It's not like, remember that clip that we all saw online with Randy Orton? When Randy Orton was laid out outside the ring and he was acting like he was knocked out. And then the match was over and Randy's like, and then he got up. Randy Orton was asking the count, can I get up? Yeah, it's okay. He got up and he just walked off. So let's hope Ricky Starks is okay. Let's hope Orange Cassidy's okay. Because that shit, when I saw it, it didn't look good. And a few people there also said, did not look good either. So shit happens. I mean, accidents happen. Nero Faye, bold move by Prime Minister Bennett trying to negotiate between Putin and Zelensky. Yeah, I mean, everything that's going on with Russia and Ukraine is awful. I've said it before. It's a war that did not need to happen. And I'm watching all the video clips that are posted online. I see all the fraud, you know, people posting stuff that's not really the war, but I've seen enough and it's horrible, especially what's happening to a lot of civilian areas. I tell you, April Hunter had such a smart thought, and I'll leave you with this. April Hunter had a smart thought. She said, if you want to give money directly to Ukrainians, a lot of Ukrainians have Airbnbs there. And she said, buy an Airbnb, reserve an Airbnb. We're not going to Ukraine. Even if everything settles, we're not going there. You pay for the Airbnb, but you don't show up. They keep the money. That's actually, I mean, let's also be honest. Now you can't write it off on taxes because when you file your taxes, they're going to be like, no, you were going to go for vacation. No, I was really just giving a donation. So if you don't mind that you can't claim it on your taxes next year, it's not a bad idea. Kind of a smart idea. I like that. But yeah, I'm hoping that this ends soon. War, that is. Because as far as ending soon, this show is now come to an end. We have run 90 minutes. You know, for those that aren't aware, for my channel members here and for Patreon, and we're starting off there because its server cannot handle more people. But starting this Tuesday, I am going to have watch parties. This is not a watch along like on YouTube where somebody does a live watch along and when you tune in, you see the host's face, you don't see the wrestling. When you tune in Tuesday night, we actually watch wrestling and it actually is recorded. And you actually don't have to have a subscription. And soon enough, when this company inks a deal with Peacock, I will be your official host for WWE pay-per-view watch parties or premium live events. So I was hired, and starting Tuesday, we do NXT. And then if I want, SmackDown was offered to me as well. And yeah, Dream says the money grab. I got a wedding to pay off. This is work. Of course it is. Yeah, I'm getting paid for it. But, you know, as a result, if I'm doing shows 7 days a week, they got to be 1 hour each time. Sure, on special nights like this, it might go 90 minutes. But starting tomorrow, the goal, 60 minutes and done. Tuesday, 60 minutes and done. Wednesday, it's gonna take a little while for me to get used to that. But a lot of the episodes you're going to get from me in the future are going to be about 1 hour episodes, maybe 70 minutes. But you'll get more episodes. So, all right, everybody, in the comment section, let me know what you thought of tonight. On a scale of 1 to 10, I give it a 9. I give it a 9. I would even lean towards a 9.5. Yeah, I'll go to 9.5 because I got my money's worth. It was definitely worth the $50. So I give it a 9.5 out of 10. And let me know what your favorite and least favorite match of the night was. Because for me, again, MJF and Punk was my favorite. Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa was my least favorite. And I will give 9.5. So let me know what you thought. I answer everybody's questions, if you notice now. So if you have a follow-up question from what we talked about tonight, post it. I will answer it. And I hope you can join Mish and myself tomorrow night, 11:05 p.m. after Monday Night Raw. So everyone, it's been real. Have a great night. Get some sleep. And if you haven't checked out Revolution, my recommendation, absolutely. Pick it up. Well worth the money. Because we don't get another one until the end of May. So it's almost 3 months after this. So good night, everybody.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the hosts. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're gonna like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're gonna get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who claim they care the most for your life. And now that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.